You are listening to Mephista Research Live, funded by EU Horizon 2020, MSCA Grant Agreement 861152, reaching out to the scientists of tomorrow.
Welcome everybody, this is the Mephista podcast. I'm with ESO 6, Anamika Naya Karuna Karan. I think I've got that pretty much right for a British person. Is it an Indian name?
Yes.
Oh, it's so beautiful the way it rolls off the tongue. Mm-hmm. And you're currently in Denmark with NKT.
Yes.
First of all, how are you liking Denmark?
I actually like it very much.
Is it your first time abroad? It isn't, is it? Because I remember from your internships, you've been to quite a few countries. Is that right?
Yes, Denmark is the fifth country I'm living in.
Oh, fabulous. Were the other ones European or has it been a mixture?
Yes, all of them. I mean, first was obviously India because I was born and raised there. And then I was in Greece for 2 months. And then Spain for 6 months, Austria for a year, and now it's Denmark.
Oh, wonderful. How is your research important? How does it relate to the real world? That's how I've been starting these interviews off, because I know it gets so complicated at PhD level. But for someone like me, I'm not a scientist. Can you tell me what you're doing?
Yes, let me try to get it into layman terms. So my work is basically in frequency combs. So frequency combs has been a technology which has been around for a while. Like it had the inventors received a Nobel Prize like a few years ago. But my project basically is involving microresonator technology with frequency combs. I know it's a lot of words, it's a lot of jargon for normal people to hear, but it's like, in short terms, we are kind of trying to bring frequency combs from a very huge, complicated thing to something really small, which we can put in a box and then just, which can be used everywhere. When we are talking about the specific applications, one major thing which has been in use so far is that frequency combs is a very inevitable component in when it comes to atomic clocks. So atomic clocks are like basically clocks which makes everything, which helps us make the time measurement more precise. Like nowadays, we need everything much more precisely, isn't it?
Yes.
For example, if you need view, the more precise, if we can measure the time, then more precise, let's say the GPS navigation would be, or any sort of sensing for that matter. And so frequency combs has been an inevitable part of atomic clocks for a while now.
But when I hear, from the little that I've learned, when I hear comb, I understand laser. Is that correct?
Yes, it is actually a laser. But I was talking about the application part.
Yes. Why does it have to be a laser for a clock?
So frequency comb is basically a set of frequencies which are just equally spaced. Just like a comb, like a hairbrush. We have hairbrush and everything is like equally spaced. So what happened is that when we have to measure frequencies of like a very high frequencies, like when it comes to optical frequencies, it's like pretty high and you can't measure it using electronic stuff. That was a major obstacle people faced. And what frequency comb kind of does is that it transforms this optical frequency. If you beat it with another frequency, you get it into a megahertz regime. And that can be easily measured using electronics. So And I think that I'm overcomplicating this at this point, but
no, it's really, it's fascinating. So you're saying that at a certain frequency, electronics can't be used. You have to go into laser technology to measure.
Yes. For example, let's talk about the normal frequencies we have, like when it comes to watches. Let's say initially we used to look at the pendulum and how much it was oscillating, and we were looking at the number of times it oscillates in 1 second, and that was how the clock was designed, like, years ago. And then through the years, it went on to a lot of transformations, like the quartz crystal and so on. And all these times, time was kind of measured in terms of frequencies. At least that's what my concept is. And so when it comes to optical frequencies, like, for example, the atomic clock is like measured on the basis of a transition of an atom. That is in optical frequencies. So you can't use something that, there is nothing that oscillates so fast that you can compare it with it to measure the time.
I see. You know where I think I'm going wrong? When I think frequency, I think a sine wave like that, going up and down. Are you saying that doesn't apply with frequency combs? Is that used for something else?
Frequency is basically the number of times something repeats in a given time interval.
Okay.
Like how many times you sip a coffee in a second? That's the frequency, how you measure sip the coffee. So the thing is, these and all, you can measure, right? You can see it. But when it comes to optical frequencies, these sine waves are so fast that you can't see it or count it. You need some sort of a counter.
Okay.
And
yeah.
The electronics has some limitations into how much it can go. I mean, you can have electronics, the whole room full of electronics, then you can measure something as fast as that. But that's not practical at some point. So what frequency combs does is that it has a bunch of frequencies which are like perfectly measured. So if you have some sort of an unknown frequency, let's say you have some optical frequency which you don't know, and then if you beat it with this frequency comb, then what beating means that you just mix both of them together. So when you mix both of these frequencies together, then we can get something that has a frequency. We can get a signal which has a frequency that is the difference between these two frequencies.
Okay.
So let's say you have 100, for simplification, if you have something called 100 and 101, the frequencies. And then when you mix it together, you get something in one unit. So this one unit is much easier to measure than 100 and 101.
Okay.
So frequency comb kind of helps in that sense when it comes to measuring stuff.
You're measuring the sort of difference.
Yeah.
And
this is the application.
Okay.
Frequency comb is just a comb of lines. Like, it'll be like 100, 101, 102, 99, 98. But when you are mixing it with some unknown frequency, you kind of get the difference between both of them. That is easier to measure. So that's the one of the applications of frequency combs, which we can see. And of course, in Mephisto, we are trying to use frequency comb in lidars, which is not what I'm talking about. That's some other application of frequency combs. So
that's, I know that's range detection and seeing obstacles. Is that correct? So
yes.
I am learning a little bit. So your application, I know you mentioned atomic clocks, but is it clocks or is it something else?
No, it's just that that's one of the applications. So my project would be to make a frequency comb and then send it to Aston, where you guys are going to use it in LIDAR technology.
I see.
So when it comes to LIDAR, we are kind of, I'm not 100% sure of this because we still have some workshops left, and that's when I plan to learn it more clearly. But from what I understand, it's like when you use, so normally in LIDAR, what you do is that you send a light to one obstacle and then you get it back. And that's how, and when you compare the one you sent and when that you, the reflected ray, that's when you get some information about where this light is hit.
I yeah. see. You get information about the matter.
Yes, exactly. It's okay. Like, I think radar is used in many military purposes as well.
Okay.
But LIDAR is like, you send some light, maybe it just, you send some light and then it hits my phone and then goes back. And from the time this light takes to hit and go back, you learn about the distance between the light source and this thing. Basically, like, if you know how fast you can walk, then if you go to one place and then come back, and if you check the time, then you know how far the place was.
I get you. You can get different information, different data from that, from exploring that.
Yes.
So what do you think? You've mentioned atomic clocks. Qing mentioned autonomous driving and agriculture. Stefano seems to be really looking at pure physics and not really an application.
Yeah.
It's like it's a big jigsaw, isn't it? And we're all building this jigsaw together.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I am familiar with atomic clocks because before this, I was working in ultra-cold atoms laboratories. That's why that's the first thing that comes to my mind when it takes a frequency call. But Qing is... using the frequency comb technology for LIDAR applications.
Yes.
And Stefano is mostly trying to build a technology. So it's like, it's pretty remarkable, this ETN network, because each of us are working in different walks of the cycle of frequency combs. Like, one is designing it, one has to build it, and then the other will use it for something. So that's why you feel like a jigsaw, because it's kind of everywhere.
It is like a jigsaw. So if you're ESR6, does that mean that you're right at the end going to test it? Or does it not work like that? Are you not number six in the chain? Is that just arbitrary?
No, I'm not number six. But it's like, according to the agreement, it's written that we would be receiving some resonators. Resonators are the thing which you use to make combs.
Right.
Okay, so I will be receiving some resonators from Stefano.
Yes.
And basically University of Lille and EPFL. Sorry, not EPFL, UPC.
Yes.
And then I'll be using that technology with NKT Photonics lasers, because we are basically a laser company. And my plan is to just integrate both of this and then put it in a box. And then I just send it to Aston, Merching, and
Alberto
would try to use this technology in LIDARs.
Okay. So why does it need, you know, like a comb seems to, it indicates that there are different frequencies of laser. Why the multiple aspect? Why not just one or two?
Because, I mean, let's take an example of a meter scale. In meter scale, there are like, I mean, like,
what's
a normal,
what's
a
meter
ruler,
scale?
A ruler, something, a tape.
Yeah.
I don't know what the, yeah. So if you take the tape, then you can see like a lot of centimeters, isn't it?
Yes.
But why do we need lots of centimeters? We can just use one or two.
Yes.
So that's the kind of question.
I see. So it's really not the right question to be asking.
I know. It's like I'm just trying to draw an analogy between a frequency cone and a meter tape.
So you could say that the wider the frequency comb, the more useful it will be. Just like a measuring tape is more useful if it's 100 centimeters long, not 10.
Yeah. I think once if you are bigger, more frequencies, then it's definitely more usable. It can find a lot.
Do you know, it's a real pleasure to talk to scientists, because during the presentations in our midterm check, it was just straight over my head. But now, I'm getting a chance to really understand it. Well, not in depth, but I'm starting to understand what it's all about. Yeah. So, Anamika, have you always been good at science? Was it like your strength at school, or when did you start developing an interest?
Well, I was more inclined to science than to any other field, I can say. But I was not I wouldn't say that I've always loved physics, but I had a more scientific kind of mind than, I have friends who have been doing business courses and commerce courses, and also some who did journalism or history, but those things just go right over my head. I just can't put my head around it. So science is something that I could understand much
easier. Isn't it just as well we all have different skills and talents?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What is the best thing about being a researcher?
Oh, wow. So there are a lot of things. But one thing would be that, at least for me, research kind of excites me, because every day you have new problems, and not all of the time it's a good way to start the day, but still, it's like you have a problem and then you try to solve it, and then there's a new problem and then you try to solve it. So it's kind of interesting. And apart from the research, I like the nomad life that it comes with it. So as I mentioned, I've been able to travel a lot of places, and I'm living in Denmark right now. It's all because of this, and the most important thing about research life is that you don't have a particular time where you have to start working. It's not like a 9-to-5 job. So if you want to start working at 3 o'clock, well, you can start at 3 o'clock and work until 10. Nobody will say anything to it. So it's quite flexible.
Yes, I guess you just have to have the results, don't you? To some degree.
Yeah.
To some degree, I know sometimes you don't know how long an experiment is going to take, so you must be quite a patient person.
No. Not. Yeah, the thing is, persistence and perseverance are two things which you definitely need when you're doing research, because it's very rarely that you get results. More often than not, you don't get it. So you really need to motivate yourself and then just get back to work the next day. But it's always, for me, it's more like if I just getting impatient, I just stop work for the day and then come back the next day.
Actually, sometimes I think having a break can be very productive, because your brain can relax. You can relax, and then maybe an answer can come. Well, for me, it can happen like that. Sometimes if I'm stuck with something, if I step away, do something practical or manual.
Yeah. Then just go to the beach.
Or go to the beach. then I can find a solution.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there an experiment you're working on at the moment that illustrates kind of like what you do? I mean, are you like firing a laser at something or other and getting data? What is your working day consisting of at the moment?
At the moment, I have some micro resonators at in my lab here. So what I basically do is that I go down to the lab, I switch on the laser, and I switch on everything else I need, and then I just. So the thing is, I don't want to get more technical, but it's basically I just shine the laser into this resonator and hope to get some combs.
Okay, so what does the resonator do? Does it break up the laser or divide it or multiply it?
No. So what it does is that, most sort of multiply it. So the thing is, how can I tell it without being complicated? So when you send in the laser I am working with, there are lots of different kinds of lasers, but the one that I'm working with has only one frequency.
Right.
And then when it goes into the resonance, some magical physics happen inside it. And then from this one laser, one frequency, a lot of frequencies can be generated. So I basically change this one frequency into a lot of frequencies, which consists of a comb.
But how do you know which are the good combs, the useful combs or not? Is it the evenness of the comb or the size?
The bigger, the better. That's
the
one
bigger,
thing.
The better.
But I think these are some stuff which are pre-decided when you build the micro resonator, that I can't do anything to increase the bandwidth or to increase the number of lines or anything. That is decided when you are building the resonator. I'm not building it. I'm just using the laser to get stuff out of it.
Is someone in Mephisto building it? Or?
Right now, I'm using some other combs, not what I got from Mephisto. Another resonator is not what I got from Mephisto. But some people are supposed to be building it.
Okay. Right. Perhaps I'm going to be interviewing them and I haven't interviewed them at the moment. Oh, that's really fascinating. So why does it take so long? Why can't you just go, I've got my frequency comb, that's it. Why the repetition?
So when it comes to this frequency comb, we can't see comb. I can't see the comb lines actually, when it goes from one stage to another stage called a soliton state, the comb lines are they have less noise, the lines have less noise, and also the intensity noise of the whole comb is low. So it's basically certain parameters which I need to get better, and then the combs are good.
Oh, I see. So it's like fine tuning to get the perfect comb.
Exactly. Yeah. But the thing is, it's so hard to reach this state. I mean, I've been trying on this device for 1.5, 2 months now, but I haven't gotten anything close to what I'm looking for. So it's just, on trying to just get it.
So what parameter do you think needs to change, or is that the great unknown?
Yeah, we're just pondering over what can we do done to make it.
Wow, it's, this is like the stuff of deep physics, isn't it?
Yeah. It's this thing that once you are neck deep in it, you don't realize it. But I think, yes.
Yeah, I can see that you're neck deep. Through the different internships that you've done, can you think of a time, can you tell us a time where you had an amazing breakthrough and how that came about, if you can think of anything?
Well, I haven't been much lucky with my experiments so far, but the thing is, most of the experiments I worked before were in ultra cold atoms, which is like a very huge experiment which is run by two or three people together, so I can't say that it's just my
sure
thing, but it's just more like a collective effort. Like we are always trying to fix stuff. But when it comes to scientific research, the thing is, you have to celebrate every single small success you get. It's like maybe you just worked half a day and you couldn't get any results. And the end of the day, you realized that you hadn't turned on the laser. So, but that's something you have to celebrate, you know? Yeah, I found it. I found the problem.
Yes. Yes, so I think that's right, because it's all building blocks and these small things can add up to a big result later on, perhaps not by you, but someone else.
Yeah, so it's more like a collective effort. So I can't say that I did something. It's just we have been trying to solve problems. Some of the problems were solved down the line, but not always.
It's very interesting. What do you like about photonics? Is it something that you've been, I know you did the ultra cold atoms, would that be photonics? Or
actually my degree is in photonics. So I decided to take photonics when I was 17 years. So it was like after my higher secondary education, I took the course where I'm doing an integrated MSc program in photonics. So I've been doing it since a long time. I mean, initially when I joined for this course, I was kind of fascinated by how much the light and its applications are linked to our everyday lives, I mean, knowingly or unknowingly. And so far it's been, I haven't got bored with photonics.
Is it essentially the study and application of light?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you take the applications of photonics, it's everywhere. You know, if you go to a hospital, they use light to probe everything inside you, like endoscopy or OCT techniques, all of them. And even if you go to this, like the fingerprint scanner.
And
communication. The fiber optics communication, which is a whole rage right now, it's also photonics. So it's amazing that how it is intertwined with our lives, but you practically don't see it.
Yes, I guess you would notice it if it wasn't there. I mean, it's for me, I'm not a scientist, it just seems so abstract. It's almost like with chemistry, you can see chemicals, and I know electrons are invisible and things like that to the naked eye, but photonics really does seem so abstract.
Actually, one of my friends are working in a company, he studied with me photonics, and working in a company who's designing car headlights. So it's like automobile lighting. So you always get light shone on your face at night, but you don't realize that so much work by photonics going inside it.
Gosh, it's fabulous. Tell us a little bit about where in India are you from? I haven't been to India. I've been to Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I appreciate how big India is. So are you southeast or is that Naeem? Where are you from?
No, I am from southwest.
Southwest.
So I'm very close to Sri Lanka than to Delhi. But if you take India, I'm from a place called Kerala.
Right. Yes.
It's a very tropical paradise in India. Yeah, it's a very nice place.
I always think when I tell people my name, Kerala. Some people confuse it with the Indian. They think I'm named after this Indian state called Kerala. Is there any advice you can give to new scientists?
For the high school students?
Yeah, I think high school.
I would say that I would ask them to just, if you're a master's student or a bachelor's student, I would say just try to spend a lot of time in the lab if you are looking for research, internships actually help a lot because me, myself, I've done a lot of internships in my life and I don't remember most of the stuff I learned in class, but I do remember most of the stuff I did in the lab. So it's pretty good. And there's a lot of knowledge you get by doing that.
Is it hard to get an internship? Is it very competitive?
I've been lucky enough to get, and most of my internships were funded. I mean, all of them were funded by the respective professors I was working with. It's just that you have to keep an eye out and then just write to the professors, send her tons of emails. But one complaint I always hear from the professors is that normally sometimes people don't go through the website and stuff properly before sending an email. So if you do your own research before you send an email, professors actually like that.
What? So if you, for example, if someone wanted to come to Aston, they should look at the AIPT web pages to see what we're doing.
And exactly.
Yeah. So you literally just focused on different countries and universities where you wanted to do an internship.
Yeah, I was mostly looking for the groups which I'm interested in. And for example, in Spain, I was working at Institute of Photonic Sciences. It's called ICFO. It's in Barcelona. And there they actually have some scholarships which they give to internship students. So if you apply for it and if you just fill everything right, then there is a good chance that you'll get it.
Oh, that's wonderful. It seems like your area of interest was what led you.
Yes, since I was working in a photonics, was studying photonics, so I knew about this institute and I was looking at the groups there, the research, and then once I got it, I was like, okay, I'm spending
brilliant.
My summer there.
Is there a site that deals purely in internships, or is it you have to go to all the individual universities?
I think I mostly went to most of the university sites, but I think now, I have seen an Instagram page where they post about PhD openings, but I don't know if it exists for internships as well. But it's just that, just write, don't feel shy, just write to professors. You might not know what you'll end up on.
Yes, that's very true. I think it's a good tip though to research and read, because it shows you're keen, doesn't it? Just drawing the interview to a close, what's the best thing about Mephista so far?
One thing I like about the ETN network is that how you get to collaborate with a lot of universities and a lot of great minds, and you kind of are trying to work to one goal together. For example, in Mephista, we are trying to get something like microresonator or frequency comb technology into LIDAR. So it's just amazing how everybody kind of comes together to work for this goal. And I appreciate the workshops and the outreach and all the stuff that's being done by the Mephista, because it's good to be taught.
Okay, well, that's absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much. So I've been talking to Anamika Nayakaruna Karan. And my name is Carola Woods. I'm project manager for the Mephista project. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Mephista Research Live, funded by EU Horizon 2020. MSCA Grant Agreement 861152.